For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Okay, there's a new face. Are you in the back? Were you afraid?
No.
Oh. Oh, you were. My mom, Becky Hume? Really? What a blessing that is. We'll have to talk. We'll talk, okay? Pardon me, for those who weren't here earlier, I'm just going to tell you I had vocal cord surgery. I don't mean to irritate you. It's just how it is. And so if you don't understand me, just look at me and go, okay, you know, have that perplexed look question. Okay, we have a lot of information to cover, so I'm going to breeze through it, all right? I brought lots of pictures. Who are visual learners here? Yeah. I like to see pictures. I get it when I see it. Other way to get things is actually to visit programs as well. So anyway, I'm just going to open up real quick for a prayer, all right? Lord, I just thank you for bringing us here together. Lord, you know who we're thinking about right now. You know, maybe someone in our church, maybe a child, maybe an adult, Lord, but someone that really could use someone to come alongside with them to feel included in the church community. Lord, I ask that you would just take away any of our preconceived notions of how it's supposed to be, Lord, and let us all be teachable today and to consider taking you out of the box, Lord, for your glory, in Jesus' name, amen. My name is Deb Peterman, and I am the Columbus, Ohio Extension Office for Johnny and Friends. And I am based actually here in Columbus. My office is at the Vineyard Church of Columbus, where I lead a disability ministry and have done so for 15 years. We actually began with a Sunday school class on Saturday night. And is that where I met Ashley? It was Saturday night? Okay, Shannon's daughter was in our group. And I haven't seen her since, was she 14, 15 now?
Yeah, she'll be here
tonight. Oh, good. Okay. Well, I'm going to give you my story. Growing up in New York, my sister and I were really excited. My mother was pregnant. And, you know, we had that nice house. And the thing to do in the 60s was to, you know, go to church. And but we were really excited that we were going to have a new baby. And my mother brought him home, and we just had it made. We have, you know, the picket fence, the dog, and two girls, and it was just wonderful. But about 6 months later, my brother got very ill with a infection and high temperature. And at that time, he's 48, just to give you an idea. At the time, doctors were not giving infants aspirin. For fear of that it might have been causing Weiss syndrome. And there's several adults that I know who have siblings about my brother's age who had that same experience, which is really interesting. But anyway, so as he started getting older, they didn't bring home the same kid. He just changed. And it wasn't really until he was 4 years old that he was diagnosed by a, you know, professional. And he was very direct, and he said to my mother, let's face it, your kid's retarded. And I remember my mother saying that it felt like a punch in the stomach. You know, here, hopefully today they're better at handling that, but that was just something you didn't talk about. In fact, I was reading Pearl S. Buck. Do you guys remember Pearl S. Buck wrote, was The Good Earth? And the Great Pearl, did you know she had a daughter with special needs? It's amazing. Well, she had been a missionary in China, and they heard about FDR and how he was using a wheelchair, and he was really instrumental in opening people's hearts to people who have disabilities to be in leadership roles. And I remember when she said that after her daughter's behavior started to become really apparent, She remembered FDR coming out and writing his story and being bold enough to be free from all the stigma. Well, she decided to write a book about her daughter, and it was called The Girl That Never Grew. And one thing that spoke volumes to me is when she said, having a daughter like her daughter who had severe developmental disabilities, she called it an inescapable sorrow because it's a constant reminder of what it could have been or, you know, what life could have been like and dreams and hopes. And do we have any parents in here? Your parent? So you know that. You know, the ideas that you had, all of a sudden, it's like a new turf for you. Excuse me. Well, there was no room in the inn for my brother, and so we didn't go to church with my parents. My mom went on the Sunday that she was designated, but my dad wasn't interested, and so they eventually stopped going to church. So, fortunately, I had a grandmother who had a new Mustang that she drove 20 miles an hour. Of course, my sister and I went, I don't remember, like maybe 8, 9, sitting in the back, you know, not what people were staring. But anyway, God was so kind to put a Sunday school teacher in my class who showed the heart of Jesus to me. I did not come to know the Lord until after my mother passed away. She had miles and miles of fabric, and she had patterns, the McCall's, with all these scriptures written on them. So my family Bible is Vogue, McCall's, Botterick. But I knew that my mother was seeking Jesus, and she was my God, because I didn't have a reference point of our eternal Father, Jesus. All I knew is that this nice Sunday school teacher planted a seed. Okay, so fast forward, age 34 is when I came to Christ after my mother died. And it was actually here at Zenos that I got saved. Okay, this is the first for me. So, just for purposes of this workshop and the next one, there are two resources that I would recommend. Donna and I wish we had these resources. I know she mentioned that in the first session. But the Through the Roof Manual is kind of like a list of considerations that you would use to begin a disability ministry. And what's nice about it, it's very easy to read, and you don't have to think about it. The plan is right there. And then the other one is a brand new resource called the Special Needs Small Pages. Boy. You can get applications that you can copy. It is the resource. If you leave with nothing but that, it'll prepare you for including children in your church program. How many of you are familiar with Johnny Erickson Tata? Is that too loud? Hey, Colin. Turn it down a little bit. Got it. Johnny said, a disability ministry is made up of many small and ordinary acts of kindness. Some of those acts of kindness, like Donna was mentioning this morning, is smiling at somebody. Or you have an aisle right here and you see someone using a wheelchair. Well, you can pick up a chair and move it. It's okay. You know, let them feel like they're part of the community. It's a smile. I'm sure you can think of all kinds of things, but just being part of the church, feeling welcome. How do you start? Pray for a clear vision. I know I mentioned this before, but Helen Keller, a reporter, had asked her, of all the disabilities that you have, which one would be the worst to have? And she said to have sight, but no vision. Our hope here at the Through the Roof Academies, because that's what these are Johnny and friends, Through the Roof Academies, we help people begin disability ministries. And in fact, in August, on the 22nd, we will have a Through the Roof Academy on autism, ADD, and ADHD in Xenia, Ohio. So it's something you might want to come as a group to and have someone go to each workshop. Then you can share notes. Well, here's a picture of my brother and my sister and I. This is the only picture my brother is actually smiling and looking out. Typically, he has autism. He's severely mentally retarded, autistic-like, nonverbal. He does have aggression issues, and he has some gross behaviors too. Comes with the turf. But this is a wonderful picture that we are actually all three of us smiling, and so I treasure it. Okay, can you picture yourself as a leader of our buddy program? How many can picture yourself? Weird to look at yourself on a piece of that kind of thing. Okay. When you decide, if God shows you a picture of maybe a people group that he's calling to serve, you can ask him for clarity. So you want to pray for that he would show you your mission field. And it is a mission field because we are learning. We are going to be immersed in a people group, and we know their language, we know their family, we know the culture. And so this is a mission field right here in your very own backyard. You pray for vision, a place to start. And Johnny and friends will be glad to help you if you're not sure where to start. We can help you start small. You know, we don't say do everything, because we know you can't do everything. You work with the people that the Lord brings your way. One thing, let me go back, if I can. There, okay. Pray for God's timing. And I remember when I was praying about, Lord, what do you want to use me for? How do you want this? Where do you want me to serve? And he showed me a Sunday school class with my brother as a little boy in it. And I said, no, thank you. I'm done with mental retardation. Pick something else. And what happened is, I think my mother said that too. But what would happen is I'd take my daughter to a playground and there would be a family there that I knew I couldn't readily invite because my church was not ready. I'd go to another playground, same thing. So about 4 months later, I laid a fleece out to the Lord. I said, if you really want me to do this, if you really want me to do this, I need Christian curriculum geared for children with developmental disabilities. Excuse me. 3 days later, I'm at my foot doctor's office, and there's a Moody magazine on the floor. Picked it up, opened it up to Under His Wings, How to Teach Multi-Handicapped Children About God. So there I am with my socks off. I knew it, but I also knew it was a commitment. And so when I went up to my children's pastor, I said, I think God wants me to start this thing. And he didn't say, well, I think we need to pray about it. You know, just kind of like belabored his little chorus. It was God's heart. She knew it, just waiting for the right person. And so, and the thing about waiting for God's timing, when we finally started a class for children with specific special needs, someone told me they had this picture of the doors blowing open. So I was waiting for lots of kids to come. Well, the Lord only brought 2 kids. And I thought, okay, Lord, what's this picture of doors blowing open? And it's like he said to me, yeah, you got a church that's ready, and you're ready, but it doesn't mean that mom and dad want to come. We can prepare our place, but it doesn't mean they want to come. In structuring your ministry, I've got this kind of circular picture, as you can see, and I'm looking at something behind you guys, I'm sorry. When you don't have a point person, it really causes confusion. When people say, well, who do I call and say, this family comes, they need a buddy or a special needs, what class or whatever, no one knows who to call because there's no point person. So you really, really want to have someone that will take leadership. And even if you're just starting a buddy, you would be that buddy contact person. And as your ministry grows, you add on different people. So you can see there's some order to that. It does help the credibility of the ministry as well. Plus, pastors love it. As you're preparing for the potential of a buddy program, you want to ask your friends to pray with you. Get the word out that you're thinking about doing this. Even talk to the children's pastor. Ask them if they'll pray with you to do this. And God will show you where it will start. I know with my pastor, she knew it was a no-brainer that we already had kids that we knew that could benefit in a regular class with the help of a buddy. Can any of you think of some kids right now that probably could use a buddy in your Sunday school class? Does anyone come to mind? Yeah? Okay. The benefits of a buddy allows the lead teacher to teach. You know, if they're chasing someone around all the time, they don't get the message of, the children don't get the focus, and then it really disturbs the class. It does encourage inclusion in the typical class, and then it does show that God loves all children. So where do you start? First thing you can do is you think of who can we serve now? Again, that would be maybe if someone comes to your mind as a little boy, maybe he doesn't have developmental disabilities, but maybe he needs someone to push his wheelchair or someone just to befriend him because he's new. I put in here, ask. You want to ask around if people know of a family that would love to come to church but can't. Look inside your church. We do recommend taking a church survey. And again, that is in this, actually both of these, the Smart Pages and the Through the Roof Manual have this survey. That allows you to really find out who is needing to be served in the church. As your church grows, as your buddy program grows, you have buddies here. Well, what happened is, these four people, actually these two women right here, they're the ones that came up to me and said, you know what, we've been buddies. We think we really need to have a special needs classroom. We have a lot of kids with sensory integration issues, okay? And so they moved from buddies and now they are lead teachers, okay? This one is a special ed teacher. Carol is a special ed teacher's assistant. Beth is an occupational therapist, and Vicki Barchi is a speech pathologist. They serve in teams, and they rotate every other week. We have a class, what we call a sensory break room. But we'll get to that. When you're starting a buddy program, let's say your church has three services. Pick one service that works. If you're going to be the leader, pick a service that works for you. Okay? Don't try to make a buddy program for L3 time slots. Start small. The application, if a parent thinks that their child would do well with a buddy, you can actually copy the application that's in there, have the parent fill it out so you can learn more about their child. And start preparing for a buddy, a good match. Okay. One way you want to let your church know you want to do a buddy program is first of all ask the pastor, is there any way that you can mention it from the pulpit that we would like to start a disability ministry or even just a buddy connection? See if he would be willing to say, this is a need in this church. They would like to start a buddy connection. They will have a table in the lobby. If you're interested, go ahead and sign up. You can also put information about Buddy in church bulletin, newsletters, email, and website. And what's really interesting, when you do this, when you pick these type of media, you start getting people who work in the field calling you. And one thing that's nice is they might be willing to be behind the scenes context. So if you have any question, what do you do when this? They might be willing to do that for you if they're not willing to be a buddy. Is it just hanging? Are you with me? Okay. Okay. Actually, this is Donna at her church in Rastrick, but it is a picture of having the interest meeting, stating this is what we would like to do at the church. We would like to have a buddy program for the 9 a.m. service. What that means is that you will be paired up with a child, you will know about the child, and that you will help them, you'll help them be part of a typical Sunday school class. In the application that the parents in the application, it gives you all kinds of information of any food allergies. What are the things that they like? What do they dislike? What sets them off? How do you comfort them? How do you redirect them? This is all information that the parents can give you. And let me tell you, the parents are so grateful when they have someone that will come alongside their child so that they all can go to church together. And then Seth, you want to schedule a training. Any of you in the field? Thank you. Life skills? Got it. Perfect. Thank you. Well, your experience really will help develop the program. You might even consider being the person that would lead a training, a formal training. That could mean just one morning, 4 hours. Or it can mean on-the-job training. Sometimes a parent will let you shadow them with their child. It all depends on the size of your church, who's available. Again, it's something that we can help you with. One of the best training places we have to offer for Johnny and friends is our family retreats. How many of you know about our family retreats? This one. Okay. Okay. Family retreats are awesome. They are a place where we train volunteers to help families affected by disabilities for 5 days break from everyday responsibility. We had 100 volunteers, over 100 STM, we call them short-term missionaries, and how many families finally? 43. So we train them for a day and a half before the families arrive, and then throughout the day, throughout the week, there's activities that we do either with the children, teenagers, adults, single adults. The parents will be in a large room. They'll listen to a Christian speaker, and then they'll break into small groups, and then they start connecting and laying down their guard. And then, about Wednesday morning, everybody's having fun. You know, I think it's about when they start looking like they're glad they're there. I just want to show this picture right here. Oops, I was. All right, we'll just go there. Another place to train is find a local church that has a respite program. A lot of churches are willing to have people come volunteer when we know that you are interested in starting a disability ministry. This is one of the best ways to see, be fully immersed in just watching kids have fun, seeing the parents come back after dinner and feeling refreshed. And as you can see, we have all ages of people who work. This is actually pictures from Donna's respite. And you have them at about every 8 weeks during the school year. About that. One of my favorite things is to take churches with me to Special Olympics. Has anybody else Been to Special Olympics? Is that a blast?
Uh-huh, I used to be in it.
Oh, you did? What was your sport?
Track and basketball.
Track and basketball? Uh-huh. You don't do it anymore?
Yes.
Just too busy, huh? Okay. The one thing nice about Special Olympics is it's a fun way to get people in this community of people. I found that if you offer one-time events, people are willing to come and join and learn. And there's a lot of fun. This year our theme was Hawaiian. Can you tell? Special Delivery is a ministry of Johnny and Friends. Johnny has written so many books that we have publishers that give us free encouragement reading or items to give away to people. It reminds me when I had my over-the-ear hearing aid. I also took some folks Christmas caroling. We actually went to the Short North, and we stopped in the stores and we sang to all the secular organizations along Short North. It was a lot of fun. And then this picture right here, this woman, her sister is a children's ministry pastor, and she told me about her sister. And what she does is she colors coloring pages, and then she writes scripture on them. And she gives them to people. So she has a mailing list. And so I said, well, do you have any friends? She goes to adult daycare 3 times a week. And she did. And so we had all these lambs to give out. And because of her, we were able to get into the daycare facility to be with her friends here. As your ministry grows, you want your team to grow. So, like I said before, we have these four ladies now are part of my special needs classroom. You want to consider having a training coordinator. You could do it quarterly. Actually, what we do is we do it on the job. We have a classroom and we have our teachers help the buddies learn how to be with the kids they're matched up with. We have an events coordinator. This is actually a through the roof I did probably 13 years ago. We just put a foot through the ceiling, and in the next workshop, you'll learn more about this. But ways to get the word out without advertising. This was actually a program that we did for the typical kids for disability awareness, so that we can actually get them on board as well with our buddy program. Johnny and Friends has 2 disability awareness programs for children ages 4 through 12. Each one has a different mission focus. Mission Unstoppable here is about our Wheels for the World program, where we collect used mobility equipment, have them refurbished by prison sites, and then they're taken on mission fields to be fitted with people who need the equipment. And this one focuses on family retreat, and the missions component is raising funds to help a camper go to family retreat. All the while, they're learning about different disabilities and some hands-on experiences as well. You got a prayer coordinator. I give you this picture right here. This is Miss Laura. Laura was born with a very little brain. And I have to tell you this story because she knew and loved the Lord. And she was praying for our church. She said, Lord, thank you for this church. Came out and she got it. She understood that the church welcomed her. And this is Miss Faith. Faith was born and spent 98 days in pediatric intensive care at the Children's Hospital. And her parents, because of their time in the hospital, they started Healing for Kids prayer ministry, where they'll go down and pray for families that are down there. So all from their experiences, the parents have served in that way. and then asking someone to actually manage the buddies, scheduling, applications, that kind of thing. Okay, I bring this up. Why have a buddy classroom? Probably the world would say it's not politically correct to have a separate classroom, but I think of when Jesus was going to heal the deaf man. In this big crowd, he knew he was going to heal this deaf man. And what he did is he pulled him aside out of the crowd and healed him there. Being hearing impaired, I know when I take my hearing aids out, it's silent. I can't imagine all of a sudden having my hearing restored in the midst of a crowd. It'd be very overwhelming. So I think Jesus, in his kindness, really kind of went to where the man needed to be so that he could heal him. Okay, now I'm going to take you through it's an idea of a classroom buddy connection. We actually called it a sensory break room. As you can see, hang on, okay. Right here, I mean, you see the centers. And right here is a closet that we had made so we can store all the items that we use every Sunday. Because we have a lot of fun items and people like to take them out of the classroom. The sensory break room was an idea of one of the special ed teachers. A lot of kids on the autism spectrum have sensory issues. It could be anything. It could be, sound or the lighting. And in this case, this is the classroom that we built, and you see fluorescent lighting. Here we have recessed lighting. The recessed lighting helps kids who have sensory issues to bright lights like this, or the sound of fluorescent. It's just an idea to put in your classroom. So anything in the environment can be too loud, too busy, too different, too overwhelming, too bright, too smelly, anything's too much. So what happens is the behaviors happen. So let's say if we have a typical class and it's a large room like this and there are kids running around all over the place. Can you picture a kid having a meltdown? How many of you would have a meltdown? Probably. And so having a place of calming is just another opportunity to meet a child where they are at. Okay, in the sensory break room, or it's a calming room, you can call it whatever you want to call it, you will see, right now, we have the doors now on the closet. This is a mini tramp. There are mini tramps that have little bars so the kids can jump up and down so they don't fall. Can have a wedge. If you have a child that can get out of a wheelchair and stretch, we can use the wedge for that. This is a sit and spin. Some kids like that. We have a soft area of, cushy bags. And then this thing is the place that all the kids love. This is a hard box that was made by a parent. And the little boy in here, he is on the autism spectrum, and he likes to hide under things. And so we have, we actually have a timer because the kids really like this room, and they would stay in there the whole morning if we let them. This is one of the teachers telling Trevor that we are now going to be moving on to another activity. We have a book reading area. Dry erase board, and you can see about how tall the kids are because the ends are about right there. By the way, all these items were donated. Rocking chair, you have toys on the floor, therapy balls, music. You can use headphones. And these are center items. This right here is white rice. And we put all kinds of little treasures in there the kids like to dig up. And then this is white sand, same concept. The first 15 minutes are spent in the class, and then we go to another room. We take kids on these wagons. We have like this little wagon trail, take them to the classroom. Before they leave, they're allowed to pick up a toy, a transition toy. So their focus is on that, and maybe that'll allow them to be able to make the transition a lot easier. Of course, food alert, and that's what you'll get from the applications if there's any kids on special diets. These are, anybody familiar with these board makers? Right here. These are great little pictures and used often for with the kids with special needs. The parents may have that format and maybe make the pictures for you for snack, worship time. We have wind-up toys. Here's a flashlight that will flash a picture on the wall. Little spinny toy. A lot of the items are held in containers. So when a kid is done playing and they know that they can put the project away, that it keeps them contained and helps them stay focused on one activity. This thing here, believe it or not, helps you take a child from one room to another. If a person doesn't like to be touched, they may hold the one end and you take the other hand. This one right here. Blue painter's tape. Some kids like boundaries. So you can put a boundary square on the floor using the blue painter's tape. This idea I actually got from California is a meat trays. And these are blocks that have, not glue, not tape, Velcro. So the kids can stack them. These are just things that they're familiar with, and they're used just as a place to calm kids. In the meantime, we play worship music. If we can get a Bible lesson in it, even where the books are, we can sit down on the floor. Again, it's if the children are able to do that. Some of benefits of the sensory break room. It's a great place when a family is looking for a home church. I do not go out running for a buddy if I have a new family. I know that they can start in this class until they decide, hey, we like it here. And then when they fill out an application, we can put them on the buddy waiting list. Otherwise, every weekend, you're going to be looking around for a buddy. It's great. Let's see if the parent did get an application filled out and we don't have a buddy for them. It's also a good place for the kid to get used to be coming to that church. So they're familiar with that church building and kind of like a transition time. If you find that they can go into a typical class with a buddy, we are all for that. We always want to go towards inclusion. Sometimes kids have a meltdown at home, and the parents are like, oh, we're not going. Well, we want to encourage parents to still come if they can. They need to be at church and hear that the Lord has a plan for their life. And then for kids having a moment in church, this is also a place we can say, well, do you want to go to the sensory room? And they'll say yes. They calm down, and then are you ready to go back to the other class? Yes. So it's kind of like a room that you wade in and out, depending on your mood for the day. Kids waiting for a buddy. And when a buddy is sick, they're waiting for their buddy to come back. But what's good about having everybody meet at the sensory break room, the buddies and the kids always meet there in the morning. If the kid can go to a typical class, they will. And when they come back to the room, and the parents pick them up at the same room. So we're not having everybody all over the place, not knowing if a buddy showed up or didn't show up. We know that the kids are cared for and safe. We do have labels, tags for the kids. And we also have pink tags. These tags right here are for runners. We have some children that any opportunity they have, they can run fast. So basically that tag says, please take me to the children's counter if I am not with my buddy. Okay, and usually we tag them in the back when we can. But usually when we're making a transition from one room to the next, they always have to have a buddy's hand, always, even if it's their wrist. We use a sensory break room to train buddies. These teachers know how to be with children with special needs and maybe have had some time with them before the buddy was identified. And so they can train them how to be with that child in the care of the room. Some churches have formal training. That has not worked for my church for some reason. And people don't want to come and spend 2 hours, 3 hours. So are we ready to start something here? How are we doing time-wise? How much time do we have? Half hour. Oh, good. So you guys can ask a lot of questions. Okay. Are there any questions? You know, we tried to do a parent, typical kid type of thing, and that didn't work because the child was too young. So I think we need to at least start with like a teenager and up. They still have to fill out their application for church membership and, you know, and all the applications for our buddies, everyone is fingerprinted. And so we do background checks. It's very important. Age-wise.
Am I on?
Oh, I'm on.
At my church, we actually have had kids serve. Teens are great. Don't recruit those teens. They really just have a natural ability to work with kids with special needs. But we had a situation arise with a child who began in the classroom, and then we moved into a partial inclusion. She was in and out, back and forth, on a Sunday morning, and depending on what part of the class she could handle, to full inclusion. But then we found as she entered, I think it was like fifth grade-ish, somewhere around there, having this adult with her, the other girls wouldn't interact with her. The other kids, we were separate, you know, and so it created not a good situation. So what we did is we chose three kids out of the classroom that we knew their parents, we talked to them, we knew, you know, these were kind of good kids and that they were there almost all the time. And we trained them specifically to help Amelia and just what they needed to do to get her through the class. Well, that changed everything because the four of them were best friends and they were seen everywhere in the church because they just took a, you know, mom said, it was really funny. She said, I always used to know where Amelia was because she literally physically hid behind her mother's skirts. And after that, she never knew where she was. And she actually serves in our ministry now. Amelia's older than that now in high school and she serves. But that's how, so you just got to think out of the box and look at every situation is unique and different and look at that situation. Because we've graduated several kids out of our program, you know, which is great. It's a wonderful thing to do because there's always three more to take their place.
What about older kids, like high school age kids? Do you have a class for them?
I do. I lead that class at my church. We have teens up. I had a 14-year-old, so, you know, he came with us right away. But actually, for those kids that can handle it, I take them in to the worship music part of the service, which is the first half hour. And then we come back to the class. We treat them like young adults. We offer coffee, tea, and a snack. We go around the table to find out how everybody's week is going because this is their fellowship time. And then we actually do the gospel bracelet on the wall every week. And we have a Bible lesson. And what's so cool, we have some traveling worship team. They love it. They go to the little kids. They go from class to class, but they still come to us last, and we get more of their time. Our kids love them, and you just see, it's so cool to see how they're, a new worship team will come in and they're nervous, and then all of a sudden it's like, hey, bud, you know, they'll go like this to each other. And, you know, so if a person can handle the loud music, we meet in front of the church. My husband stays in the classroom with another person because we have a couple folks that have Asperger's that just don't want all that noise and stuff. So that works out really well. We have kids, we have, you know, teens up, they still live at home. So their parents could be in the church. We have it during the service, so that way everybody goes to where they need to be. You got parents sitting together, hopefully, they're still together. We got the siblings go to where they're supposed to be, and the teens, this is their class. You know, they know that this is where they get to learn, and, you know, so, you know, we don't have a buddy program for teens and adults because we just have a class for them.
And sometimes, too, with your teens, you can take, do the same thing, is take a couple teens in the youth group and pull them aside and say, look, would you be willing to be a special friend? And all they need to know is a certain things that they need to know for that particular person. And then they just become buddies, and, you know, and they hang out together. And usually we try to train three or four of them because, A, they're not always there, and, B, it doesn't always put the pressure on that kid always to be with that person. You know, they can. So it naturally mingles that special needs teen into the group. Because they're going to hang with their buddies. As soon as they connect, I mean, those kids connect, and they mm-hmm. just stay connected forever. And, you know, and so it just pulls them right into the group. And that's another way. We do a teen young adult class, too, because it's kind of cognitive level. It's not really yes. age-related. They get older, but they keep coming. And that's where they want to be. You know, that's where they're comfortable. That's where they hang out. And you know, our class starts with Uno. They start every single class with a game of Uno. I mean, it's like, yes. heaven forbid you lose the Uno cards because the rest of the hour is shot, you know. I mean, it's just, it's their thing. And then they go on from there and do, you know, the serious stuff.
What I found also happens, we have kids or adults that have providers, and I require the provider to stay in the class if I don't know that person. And a lot of them are Muslim. And guess who we talk about? We talk about Moses. And, you know, I mean, there's a great opportunity for God to use that student to bring others into the kingdom too.
Do you have a specific curriculum for the older students as opposed to the younger students?
Okay, I'm kind of like, I use what I have. I do everything visual, and I try to tell the story four different ways. So I might stay in a lesson for 4 weeks. So curriculum-wise, anything without words, a lot of words. We use the Read With Me Bible. I like it because it's not childish pictures, and they're fun, big, exaggerated characters, and there's a little bit of words, not a whole lot. I have a lot of non-readers. Another thing is we have an interpreter that will interpret the songs on Sunday morning, and from the folks that I have that don't talk, they mimic the worship song. So, I mean, just taking God out of the box and meeting people where they're at. So, you know, there is curriculum. Friendship Ministries makes curriculum geared for adults. But again, the people that God's been bringing are people with really low developmental ability to understand. So we try to do more visual and music.
You're always doing your curriculum, whether you're doing it for kids or adults, in so many formats. You know, in our kids' class, we use Legos, we use blocks, we use puppets, we use a tent, we reenact everything, you know. So one kid likes it via play, another kid likes to make up poems, another kid likes to use the magnet board and spell out the lesson. You know, he's very incredibly, you know, bright that way, but forget the other stuff. You know, it's, and so you take those teachable, in classrooms especially with the kids anyway, it's a lot of one-on-one, and you grab those teachable moments. And for one kid, you do it this way, and for another kid, you got them over there building Legos, and they're building the temple, or whatever they're doing. And, you know, you've got all these different things happening. And it doesn't take a lot of stuff, because it's stuff that's kind of around everywhere. You just have to be, you have to, as Deb said, you have to think out of the box. What works for that particular child? You know, the same thing with teens. Our teens have huge behavior issues in our classroom, but they're very cognitively, oh my gosh, they're, you know, some of them are off the scales with brilliance. And so we do very high level lessons with them, but keeping them from beating each other, you know, to death on some Sundays can be a challenge. I mean, we have to, you know, you have to work around the whole situation. It just depends on who the Lord brings to you. And trust me, he doesn't bring them all at once. You know, he gets them one at a time. You know, even in big churches. I mean, I don't think I've ever had, we have a large church, so I had more than two arrive, new ones on a Sunday, and that has probably been twice in all these years. And, you know, they come one at a time, so he builds it slowly, so you have time to adjust, because for every new one, you have to adjust. It's just a constantly flexing ministry. You know, you're just, but it's never boring, trust me, it's never boring.
Okay, on your pieces of paper, I'm going to try to have you learn something. If I don't have the slide here, I'm just going to, if we have some time. I want you to write the letters across, okay? Write the letter P, R, I, P, R, S, W, B, G, yellow. Did I have white? Yeah, okay. Okay. Got the letters? Okay, I'm going to do it again. P, S. Sorry. Go ahead.
You said P, O, S, W, B, G,
Y. Okay. Okay. The first one is the letter P. Purple. Take construction paper. Slap a page of purple. God is royal. What does in the Bible does purple usually symbolize? Royalty. King of kings. Are we kings? Are we queens? And they'll tell me no. Only God is, because he's perfect. So what is our problem? And I point to black. Got the letter B. What's our problem? Sin. What does sin look like? Well, hitting, you know, stealing. If they can talk, they're learning that what sin could look like. Okay, so does God leave us in our sin? Does he just leave us there? No. What did he do? The next color is red. And I usually point to a picture of Jesus on the cross that I have above the red. Jesus is God's son, and he came here to die for our sins. Now, will we still sin again? Yes. But Jesus died on the cross for our sins. And above the Jesus on the cross, I have the picture of Jesus. You know that picture where he's knocking on a door? Like a round door? Okay.
No.
What is that? All right, so that uses the door, and this is what I do. I said, does Jesus go to the door and take a stick of dynamite and blast that door open? No. Does he go, like, kick that door open? No. And so we kind of be silly like that, but we say, no, he gently knocks on the door. And so when someone knocks on the door of your heart or on your door, what do? Open the door, okay? And so they understand that kind of concept. So we got red. Okay, so when we say yes to Jesus, come into our heart, Jesus promises us, what's W? White. He makes us white as snow. Our sins are clean, right? Okay, white as snow. And then what does Jesus promise in the letter B? Blue usually symbolizes life, the river, faith. And then the next color, he promises that he's going to grow us. Because of his faithfulness, we'll learn more about him and we'll keep growing.
Green.
And then yellow.
Green is grow.
Oh, green, sorry. Green, sorry about that. And then the last color is yellow. What does yellow usually symbolize in the streets of gold? Promise of heaven. And so I'll do that every week. I actually have them take turns going through that. They say, what's this mean? You know, and they'll go through it themselves. Have you all seen those gospel bracelets? They have little beads. And I think I have a picture of it in the next session. But we do the whole gospel bracelet every week. And then on the picture that was up there earlier, we did the story of Moses. Moses going to Pharaoh. Let my people go. What if Pharaoh said no? And so we keep going back to Pharaoh's heart was hardened, black. And so we kind of work off the lesson and work Pharaoh's heart being hardened. So you seeing, getting the idea of what that might look like? Now, I don't know how much that costs to do the construction paper, but I work off the wall all the time. We did 8 days creation. And the first one was black, in the beginning, God. The next one was, I don't remember the order, but anyway, above it I had a coloring page of a sound like this, right? They colored the page, and then there was a page with a number. So we put the number one on the first day, the picture of what the day represented, and below it said, and what did God say at the end of the day? It's good. We go through the whole thing to the end, the day God rested. And what do you say at the end of the day? It's really good. The kids can see the visuals and go across that. You can work off your wall very easily, and I can share pictures of that.
Another thing you can do is, you know, we have, Deb showed some sensory bins, one with sand and one with rice, and you can put bird seed, and you can put, we have several different ones that we have that we just got plastic bins and filled them with stuff. And we pull a different one out each week, and then we put different stuff in it. And if you're doing the creation story, of course, you get those little animals that they, you know, they cost you a dollar at the dollar store, and you throw them in there, and they dig them out. And you know, while they're digging for them, you're talking through the story, and you're getting them to tell you the story back in the process. Or if you're doing, you know, Noah the Ark, or whatever you're doing, you know, you can use those types of things to teach what you're teaching. It's just in a format that they can relate to, because sitting down for a Bible story isn't going to work. If it does, great, sit them down for a Bible story. But, you know, I can tell you in the classroom, most of the kids are so involved that they can't do it that way. So you need to grab, you know, you need to figure out what, and again, it's going to look, every church it looks different, every classroom it looks different. The bottom line is think out of the box and think creatively. And how does, as you get to know Jimmy comes, you know, we at our church, we don't give him paperwork right away. We, you know, my first question is, tell me about him. What does he like to do? What doesn't he like to do? Are the things that set him off? What do we need to avoid? All those kinds of things, those key questions you want to ask right at the beginning, so that you have a good understanding and you can safely send parent off to worship. And then after a few weeks, if they keep coming back, and trust me, they will, because they never ever seem to check out any place else, because there's not many places to check out. There's very few of us out there. And they decide to come. Then we give them the paperwork and say, okay, tell us really, so that we can make sure that everybody can see it that needs to see it, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so you want to, I forgot where I was going. Oh, well, went out of my brain.
Do you ever have, now that you have a program in place, do you ever have teachers that will come to you and say, Sunday school teachers that will come to you and say, I don't know, but I think little Billy in my classroom might have a problem, but the parents haven't said anything. How do you deal with that?
Well, usually when we talk to the rotation, they do like a quarterly rotation with the teachers. I'll go and share with the teachers, this is the type of programming we have, especially with the younger kids, if the kids aren't identified yet. We'll say, listen, we'll come in and observe. And sometimes we might do a little secret buddy thing. You know, if we have an extra person to say, listen, not sure about little Johnny, and doesn't look like parents are sure yet either. And rather than say, well, we did this, we asked them, have us come in, observe, and we basically handle it. You kind of wait, you almost have to wait till the parent comes to that place towards acceptance.
And you will have those issues. I mean, that is just, if you, especially if you're a larger church and a larger program, parent issues become, but you know what, they come around. We have one going right now with a little boy with autism, and he is absolutely brilliant, and they're focused on that, but they forget that the behavior issues, when he pounds on four kids during Sunday school, is something that needs to be dealt with too. And so the children's department said, please help us. I mean, they're the first one, they run down to us on Sunday morning when they get somebody and say, please, do you have anybody extra? And you know, so we buddy them, and they know that. They don't like him coming to our classroom, but they're slowly recognizing, because his behavior issues are getting more prevalent as they age, you know, as he's grown over the last year. And so they sign him up for VBS, which is next week, and they send him up for a buddy, you know. And so they slowly are coming, but you're always, you know, and sometimes you have to take a children's ministry director with you to address an issue with a parent. I would never, in your room, you can certainly do it one-on-one with them, but I mean, if you're having to address them where they're really in big time denial, I know we don't do it alone. We take the children's ministry director and say, you know, we need to talk to you about an issue. But these parents, a lot of these parents, again, these new diagnoses and stuff, you know, I talked earlier about they've just been slammed, they're in denial, they're into all these things, and they're like, you know, what does this mean? You know, I don't even know what this means. And they'll, their child will be in a special school or whatever, like in this particular case, he's in a special school, he's got, well, he never behaves like this at school. Well, he's one-on-one at school.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, you know, that's the way the school is structured, because he's in this special school, and it's like, well, no, he doesn't have the opportunity. Put him in a room full of 25 kids, and he can't handle it, you know? Now, he can with some redirection and intervention, and he does fine. But so it's one of those issues, you know, I've had them where parents really want to keep their kids in inclusion, and it's not appropriate. I mean, the kid just falls apart. And so you just have to gently say, you know what, inclusion for this hour really works, because this is a nice, calm, structured, and he does fine. But inclusion in this hour, when we do this, all this music and all this noise, let us bring him to our room, and let's just try it. Just, you know, if you can get him that far. And then, of course, the kid falls in love with it, and the parents come along behind. So there's a lot, it's just a lot of ways you have to address things.
You know, one thing I was going to say is that you might get parents that are not churched, and they are used to the public system. They're used to having things happen. Well, the church is a different economy. It runs differently. And, you know, all we could do is the best that we can. And sometimes you may not be able to serve a family. I had that happen, and it was a sad day for me, but it was also a day it reminded me that there's only one Savior, and it's not me.
I came up with a thought. I don't know how to reward this, but we have a Saturday night Bible study here at this church for young adults and young teens. And I have a learning disability myself, and our leaders also, I don't know if you guys do this in your church, but we also encourage our students to also teach the Bible so that they are able to have confidence in themselves and build their strength in themselves. But we would take them, we would do one-on-one work with them, and I think that is also a key in a Bible study, because to have them to be participating in it, in interaction, I would say that I thought in my whole life that I would never teach.
Me too.
And they said, no, you're going to teach. And I said, okay. But I'm just saying, I think for some of us, it's really neat to see the different kinds of disabilities up there teaching, because everyone has a gift and everyone has a way of learning in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hard as a teacher, as me, I think it's really hard to meet each child's needs or each young adult's needs in one setting. It's really hard to know how, okay, this girl, she has attention span for 3 minutes. This guy has attention span for 20 minutes. There's always a different aspect And it's really hard to know, it's really hard for a teacher to know how to prepare a teaching in a way like that.
Well, and the other thing you add in there is that 1 week you have it set at this level because you're thinking who might be in the class, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you have someone else. It's almost like when people interpret, mm-hmm. you know, how far are they ASL or how are they, sign exact language. So it's finding that medium place to teach, which is hard to do. But, you know, if you include not only reading the word, but maybe what does that look like? Mm-hmm. Maybe examples. So just kind of like pulling those visuals in. I'm sure you probably do that. But
We used to do the W questions on who was in the passage, and then we did where was that at, and then we did what, and then I hate why, because that's comprehension. That's comprehension of my handicap,
yeah.
that you have to visualize and you have to grab, it's not always there. The comprehension is really big in our group. Our kids are very, they're very high, and then we have some low. So we have a lot of people that are independent and all that. So it's really hard to know how to do that too.
How many are in your group? Just guess.
15.
Okay.
Every Saturday.
What if?
Every other Saturday, sorry.
What if you did the lesson plan and then you broke into two groups where one might be?
We haven't tried that yet. We have.
It's a thought, and that way that table leader can know how to go both directions. Just a thought, because your group is large enough to do that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good job. Keep it up.
The other thing we really haven't touched on a whole lot is the Lord may bring you medically involved, children, teens, adults, whatever, young adults. And that's kind of looks a little different. We've been talking a lot about behavioral and sensory issues and that, just because autism is such a, and those unseen disabilities is such a big thing right now because there are so many. But you may end up with a program that has medically fragile children or teens or whatever, and then you need to look again, ask for those volunteers, and it's amazing how many nurses and therapists and everybody, all these people come out of the woodwork when you ask and tell them you have a need. And we happen to have a program right now that's very mixed. We have severe autism and then we have severe medically fragile, and we have a whole corner of our room that's cordoned off, so to speak. We block it via bookcases and stuff. And we set strict boundaries with the kids that are mobile, that they're not allowed on the mat because we have some very, very medically fragile kids there, and we have nurses with them. We have a nursing rotation schedule that stay with them because they have seizures all the time. They have, they just lots of issues. So you don't know who the Lord's going to bring, but I'll tell you, if he brings them, he's also going to provide the people. You just may have to seek and ask. Don't be afraid to ask for those people to come alongside you. And give their expertise. Or, at one point we didn't have nurses in the room all the time. The kids were not that severe. They were our backup. We had an emergency system, so if we ever needed them, we could get them right away. Now the kids, a couple of our kids have worsened significantly, and so we're not comfortable being in there without a nurse in there. So we have a nurse in there every week the entire time. It's changed. It's always, you're always going like this. That's never boring.
We had a young man that was medically fragile, and at that time I couldn't find a nurse. And so I said to the parents that we really need to have his nurse come in and be with him. Well, about 4 months later, his nurse accepted Christ, because here's a church that loves the little boy that she's caring for. And she was hearing the word. And so, don't be afraid to say, you have a nurse or, waiver or what have you, because God can use that child, that person, to bring others into the kingdom.
I just wondered, when you had the medically fragile kids having seizures or having problems, how did the severe autistics or, the other children that didn't have those medical problems react when something went on? I mean, how did you kind of keep one group calm while the other group were kind of, you know, having problems?
Usually the other kids are totally oblivious. Because they're in their own world. I mean, or, you know, we've never had an issue. We actually pull our other kids sometimes on good days. We pull our other kids around, our medically fragile kids, and we do our lesson right there. And because we're always, even though we don't know what's going in comprehension, we're always reading to them, singing to them, talking with them, telling them the lesson, that type of thing, because we don't know what's going on. But it's never really been an issue because they really don't, they're not aware. They're, you know, because the kids that are in our classroom are really pretty severe, so they're pretty much in their own worlds. You know, they're all doing their, you know, they're all doing different things, but they're all doing their own thing, you know, around them. And it's not ever been a real issue because we have, our kids are floating in and out. We use wagons and things. I mean, those are great tools. If you have a playground at your church or you're blessed to have a playground, great, best time to start a disability, worst time to start a disability ministry to get volunteers is in the summer. Best time is in the summer because you can use a playground. If you need a break time, you know, and you need to get them out, you know, we have, you know, music issues in our church because that pounding of the, you know, wah, 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 it just sets one of our kids off like crazy and we can't get them to turn it down. So we take a walk every Sunday twice during the service when they do the wah, wah, wah stuff and it sets them off. And, you know, and we go out and we time it and we go, okay, you know, and we give them the schedule and the timing and we bring them back and we do our thing and then we do it again. It's just, and so playgrounds are great, you know, a lot of churches now have playgrounds because they have daycares and stuff like that. So that's a great backup. Hopefully by winter you have another plan in mind. It's a little cold in the winter, so.
Yeah.
Or you have an indoor playground like Deb's church, which is really nice. Not common though. Other questions?
I'm loud.
Okay.
Can you guys talk a little bit about
I mean, like in like a youth group scenario, you know, it's been really hard for me to find a teenager that would be interested to do that in during their time. That's the hard thing. I've not had a whole lot of success in that arena. But again, it's one of those things that if it's not led by the youth pastor, you know, they don't have that vision of, well, you know, it's not about us, you know, but it's also that age of the teenager. We had a youth group come and help with family retreat this year, and I talked with the youth pastor. This is the second time we brought a team, 26 kids, and I said, you know, how did you get all these kids to sign up? He said, well, all of a sudden mission trips became going to Italy and going to Mexico, not going to a people. And so they stopped doing the typical mission trip. And what they did is said, we're going to go serve people right in our own backyard, so to speak, and learn how to be like Jesus. And so he actually brought all these kids to retreat. And as a family member, it just blesses me when someone chooses to hang out with us, as opposed to be a profession. No offense about that, but it just, when it's a choice, it's a blessing. But that would be a good place for a youth group to learn how to include a person in the regular year program.
And if any of the youth in your church group go to serve at a camp, like our church denomination has a camp for disabilities, you know, it's 3 days or 4 days, whatever it is. And so they recruit a bunch of the teens to go and help. And then when those teens come back, because they're trained, just like when they come back from family retreat, they are trained. And then we just absorb them right into the teen program again and say, okay, you know, Joey over there, he needs a little help. We need you guys to come alongside him. And, you know, it's hard because that's an age with kids that they're, you know, they're all over the place. But that's one thing that has worked for us is that those kids that go and then they really get into it, you know, whether it's family retreat or your own church youth, you know, or whatever. If you can send some kids off to do that and help, and then they come back and they're ready to do it and they're not afraid of it. Or get them to a respite program or something like that, or somebody else's respite. In fact, if anybody's in the Cincinnati area, we have VBS next week with over 20 special needs kids, because we're now the VBS program that can take special needs kids. So all these people sign them up. But finding volunteers during a work day in the morning from 9 to 12 is not easy, because a lot of our volunteers obviously work. And so we're like, ah, great thing. I mean, it is a great thing, and it's grown over the years, but it really, you know, but that's a great way, you know, come offer to help somebody else, and then you learn in the process. You know, we welcome outside. Our respite program keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, so we keep recruiting from outside. And, you know, I contacted a couple other churches that I know have respite programs or programs going, you know, disability ministry. I said, do you have any trained volunteers you can send us? You know, and because we want those things, but that's why we need more churches doing it, because it shouldn't be, this tiny little handful of churches trying to carry the whole load for a metropolitan area. If we all do a little piece, yeah, it makes it a whole lot easier for everybody.
I don't know of any local program respite here in the Central Ohio area. I do know there's a church that once a month, they have adults come all day long, and that's at Peace Lutheran Church in Gahanna. Okay.
Some of our students in our Bible study, they go to it.
Okay. I'm sorry.
There's a training ground right there. You know,
Peace Lutheran. Yeah, and usually I know if someone says, can we come visit your program? I'm like, yes, because we can't have enough people do this. So you're welcome to come visit us too. Yeah. No, you're not.
I was just wondering about the respite program. Now, is that something that people can come free of charge? And is it in your church, or do you go to... you use people to send out to different homes, or?
No, don't do that. I mean, having kids go to a person's home, yeah, as opposed to having a church, I don't recommend doing it unless it's inside the church.
Yeah, okay.
Your church may decide to set up a respite program where you provide in-home care, you know, to the family, so that you go to their home, watch their child, the family goes out, or something like that. That's another version of a respite program. And we have a respite program that is, yeah, there is no charge to it. And it's, you know, for a 3-hour time frame for the families, it's on Friday nights. And we use it actually as an outreach to bring people into the church. We're actually going to be forming a website down in the Cincinnati area called freerespite.com that will link all of the churches that do respite programs. So, you know, families can go on and say, oh, that one, you know, that one works for our calendar, and click on it, and it takes them straight to that church's respite program. And so it's not linked to any one church. It's you know, a group of churches, because when you think about it, you know, we decide we want to go to a different church, we kind of go church shopping, and we, you know, we just go in and we visit maybe multiple times or once or what. A family affected by disability can't do that, you know, and so, which is why when they come in, they never leave. I mean, truly, it's rare that I've ever had a family come after the first time, and I'll say, you know, go get to know the church a little bit, take a few weeks, you know, we'll take care of Johnny or whatever, you know, and they're hooked by week two, you know, because just because you've loved on Johnny for 2 weeks, and they've never had that, you know, they've never had somebody. I mean, we're calling all these new families for VBS, and they're saying, you're calling me to find out about my child? Because we want to know ahead of time what we're dealing with, so we've got a lot of new families signed up, so we do it for respite too. When we have new families signed up, we call them, we interview them, we talk to them, tell us about them, you know, what they need, so we can plan appropriately and have some pre-knowledge before they walk in the door. But yeah, respite programs can take a million different versions. Yeah. The only thing I would caution you on respite programs is make sure if you're going to do respite, it's a great thing to do, and it's the number one need, parents will tell you, beyond, you know, actually being able to come to church. is make sure you have something in place on Sunday, because if they come to respite on Friday or Saturday, and they come to your church on Sunday, you better be able to handle them, or you're again going to be, you know, yeah, it's going to disappoint the parent, you're going to reject, you're going to, all those things come into play, and you don't want to do that. So you need to be careful, you need to think through, how do you want to do this, and where do you want to start, and again, start small, pick one thing, look at your church, where are you at, what do you have right now, who has the Lord brought you there, start there and go from there.
One other respite we do have that I do lead it, but it's called the Boardroom, B-O-A-R-D. It's for teens up, and it's on a Friday night once during the school year for 3 hours. We will have teens come. We share pizza and a drink, and then we start playing board games. The requirement is they have to know how to play a game. I don't care if they play Uno all night, shoots and ladders, or whatever, but that allows the parents to go out and go for dinner, just to, you know, whoever they want to go with. I do charge just because it's coming out of my own pocket, and it's just for the pizza and the soda. But, you know, it gives us a chance to hang out. You know, having a brother with special needs, we did not play board games because he liked to toss the game up in the air or eat the dice. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to learn how to play games like that. But if that's another idea, maybe for your group.
When we do our respite, we handle both the child or adult actually take up to kind of, you know, in the 30s. Now we're getting adults that come in because we kind of put them to work. We put them up with something to give them something to do and of course a buddy with them. But we also take the siblings. So the parents truly are free for the evening. So everybody structures differently. We always have a message to ours. At some point there's some type of, you know, a focus to it. You know, for Christmas we used to have Santa come in and tell the real Christmas story because it was such a visual, you know, and those types of things. We just do a whole variety of things. But
done.
It's time. We're done. Yeah.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.